This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
We respectfully acknowledge the traditional custodians on which the Joy Studios stand. We pay our respects to the Wurundjeri, Boonwurrung, Taugawurrung, Dja-Dja-Wurrung, and the Wathaurong people of the Kulin Nation, and to their elders past and present. Welcome to As I Was Saying, produced at Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. My name is Lana Wolf. Ooh, can't anybody see it? February 2015, I was accepted to participate in a conference called Cultured Queer, Queering Culture, Indigenous Perspectives on Queerness at the University of Wollongong. It was at this conference that I met Tafunga Nerpira. Tafunga is from New Zealand and he integrates his knowledge of the Māori School of Artistic Weaving with performance and digital art paradigms. In doing so, Tafunga aims to create works that critique hegemonic discourses, destabilise pervasive stereotypes, and ultimately empower Māori notions of identity. Tafunga's creative practice affirms Indigenous ways of being to expose both the positive and negative impacts of globalisation. He currently studies towards a creative PhD through the School of Māori and Pacific Development. At the conference, Tafunga presented his paper titled Tranny Tricks, the Blending and Contouring of Rauranga Research. Rauranga is Māori weaving, and Tafunga believes that blending and contouring are fundamental tools in what he calls a tranny's bag of tricks. According to Tafunga, trans people are often perceived as tricksters, people who hide parts of their lives away to fit socially acceptable norms. His research flips perceptions and instead argues that acceptable norms embrace trickstery behaviours, rules of propriety intended to hide difficult social realities. Tafunga believes that a trans perspective both blends and contours context. It allows fluid ways to interpret engagements. And this is his story.
So my name is Tafunga Nōpira, or Tafunga Mary Luke's Nōpira. But that's not my birth name. My birth name is Richard Tafunga Kiriopa, and I changed my name a few years ago to more adequately describe the person that I feel I am, rather than the person I thought I was when I was in my youth. And I would say I identify as whakawahine, which is a Māori term that means, like wahine means a term that we use to describe a woman, and whaka is a particle that we add on to the beginning of words to turn nouns into verbs. So whakawahine is being like a woman. And in terms of my tribal context, it's strange, like, my ancestors didn't really have language to describe queer sexual identities. My ancestors had terms to describe people by gender, but those terms were more fixed on social roles. That's my perception as a researcher, based on the research that I do. The term whakawahine is a term that's really been, reclaimed in contemporary times by people who occupy more of a trans space, like a masculine space taking on female attributes or female social roles. The opposite term of that is whakatane, which means being like a man. Tane is the term for man. And what I like about the term whakawahine is that it says, it implies that I can be like a woman, but part of that also says I can be like a man too. So I really, really enjoy the nuance of the term whakawahine, because it says that I can be whatever gender identity I want to be. For me, it allows me a space to be able to shift genders, and that's generally what I do. Sometimes I'm more masculine, sometimes I fulfill more feminine social roles in my community and in my family.
This life process that Tafanga has gone through is a process of decolonizing, and I asked him to take us through what that process was, why that process happened for him, and what was the meaning behind needing to decolonize and claim more of a cultural space.
As a child, my father was really, he played rugby league for New Zealand, and I was the only boy in our family. And even though as a young boy, I really liked wearing my mother's dresses and putting her makeup on and things like that, my father was adamant that, no, I need to behave like a boy. And so he really trained me in quite masculine ways. And I really was, I'm an Aquarian, but and I think anyone being forced to do, especially children, being forced to do things they don't like or things that they don't feel good about, like I was really resistant to constantly being molded in a particular kind of way. And once I got into my teens, I started to, I grew up in Christchurch, which is one of the places in New Zealand, and it's in the South Island, where there was large groups of settlers from England that arrived and settled. So Christchurch is a very, how can I describe it in a way that doesn't come across as being negative, but it's to me it felt like a really, really colonising space. In retrospect, I suppose, it felt like a really colonising space. In comparison to the village where I'm from, which is completely Māori, everybody is brown, everyone is related, we've got carved meeting houses everywhere, and the landscape is embedded with our ancestral identity. So in my teens, I kind of growing up in this quite colonised space and feeling strange about my sexuality and gender. I identified as being gay, and I kind of held on to that through my teens, my 20s, and the early part of my 30s. And then when I was in about 35, and I started doing a master's degree in fine arts, I'd spent time just previously travelling through the States and the States and Canada, and around that time, the term tranny was really intern in American gay culture and Canadian gay culture, and so my friends would often just say, "Hey, tranny," and in the work that I do, the artwork that I do, my work is all self-portraiture. Well, it has been to date. And when I started looking back into my work and trying to understand what my work was about, because often as an artist, I'll make things in response to whatever I'm feeling, and it will take a long time to figure out what I've actually made. But in looking at my work, I started to realize that actually this whole idea of being transgendered or a tranny, it wasn't just an in thing. Tranny, like, what is tranny? Like, it's about transitioning. It's about being something that I've never really thought about before. And so through my master's research, I really, really started to explore being transgendered. And it was strange because growing up as a gay man, you know, I hated gay spaces. I hated being gay. I really was like, this sucks. I don't want to be gay. Like, who wants to be gay? Like, I spent a lot of time in gay spaces, being really traumatized. Being Māori in New Zealand is one thing, but being Māori and gay in New Zealand, Aotearoa New Zealand, is another thing. And so through my master's research, I really started questioning my gayness, and I was like, well, actually, my ancestors didn't have a word for gay, so So maybe I'm not gay, maybe I'm something else. And through my research and artwork, I really started to accept being transgender. And at first it was strange because I'm quite a masculine guy, I think. And I was like, well, you know, I don't look like other trannies. I don't act like other trannies. But then I started to meet a lot of other Indigenous artists who identified as transgender, and they also didn't appear the ways that I perceived transgendered people. Like, actually, there's something in this expression of a gender identity which is different to our embodied gender identity that I really need to explore. And so I really took that on board. And then through my research, just started to notice the way that my gender would shift constantly. So sometimes I'd inhabit a really, really feminine space and I'd dress like a woman. Other times I'd need to be a man. I was in the last year, all my nephews are starting to turn into young men. I'm one of a handful of men in my village. And in the last year, I turned into a man again. It was weird. Like, I had this experience halfway through last year where my friends were like, hey, you're different. Are you all right? Like, you know what? I think I've turned into a man. They're like, what? I was like, yeah, I think I'm a man. And I'd never been able to quite feel comfortable saying that I was a man before until last year. And I don't know how long I'm going to be a man for. I have no doubt, based on past experiences, that I'll need to shift gender again. And so I like it. I like the unpredictability of that, I think. And I like being, I like having a gendered identity that is in tune with the needs of my community. I really, really enjoy that. I feel a sense of privilege about that, because there aren't many transgender people or that I know of anyway in my community. So, or people who identify as transgendered, I suppose. So yeah, I feel like I have quite a privileged position in my community by being able to shift gender.
Before, when you said you didn't feel like or appear like how you perceived other people and their experience of transgender, is that because the symbols, the messages, the types of people that you saw were white, and so there wasn't that cultural connection, or was it something else?
I think, like, that's one layer of it, but I actually think the essence of it is that gay social spaces are really, really monocultural, and that they're a Western monocultural space with really particular ideas and quite fixed and quite compartmentalized ideas about identity. And so growing up in what I perceived as a gay space, or what I understood as a gay space, it became all too easy to take on the stereotypes and stigmas and perceptions of identity that seem prevalent in gay spaces. And so I just accepted that as a gay guy, I would be maybe camp or would be a particular category of gayness, and that within that social setting, or as part of that social setting, there were also another group of people who were trannies, and I wasn't one of those because I fit into other categories. So I think, you know, I think I really didn't really question kinds of social norms that are a part of mainstream gay culture. And I really, really took those on board. And it wasn't until I started exploring those things from artwork and research that I started to really think about gayness in those terms, in those really concrete, monocultural, Western terms.
For you, part of this process has been connecting to what makes sense for you within your particular Maori cultural context. Has your Maori community, your family, your tribe where you come from, have they seen this within that social and political conception, or have they been less accepting to it?
No, actually, you know, as a young person, and this, I mean, this harkens back to my response to the last question. I think me taking on board those ideas about gayness and who I was within a gay community or within a mainstream gay community made me feel quite self-conscious about who I was when I walked back into my Māori community, or the space where I was brought up in, because, as I said before, being Māori and gay, there was a double load of stigmatisation, I suppose. And so I felt self-conscious as a person within my community because of what I'd taken on board from being in quite a gay space. But actually, as I started to identify more and more with being whakawahine, I started to notice that within my community, that actually people didn't have the same stigmas or sense of discrimination, or they didn't have the same fixed categories that I had in my head, and so they just saw me always as Tāwhanga, the kid who ran around snotty-nosed in the park. Like, I expressed that really badly, I suppose, but I suppose what I'm trying to say is that my community see me as me, and like everyone else in my community, I'm an important part of a bigger picture, and it was the stereotypes that I'd taken on board when I was outside of my community that made me feel like I didn't fit in. And once I started to accept who I was, it was like magic. It really was like magic. And, you know, now as we're speaking, you know, I'm sitting at our tribal, in my village, at our community's dining room, by our community's meeting house. And I realise that I have a really special place within our community, and my relations really love me and they respect who I am. And if I turn up wearing a full face of makeup, they love me just as much as if I turn up in my bush short and shorts and no shoes. So yeah, it's been quite empowering.
Like everyone, Tāwhanga has stories within stories, and one part of his story is about contracting HIV and his journey since, further discovering himself and claiming more fully his identity and accepting himself in more authentic ways.
When I was 21, it would have been 2 weeks, I think, after I turned 21, I went to Mardi Gras in Sydney with my boyfriend at the time, and actually had a really, really terrible time. And during that trip, my ex and I, we broke up, and that, you know, that was fairly traumatic in itself. I mean, I think most people around that age are pretty drama. However, when we got back to New Zealand a few days later, when we got back to Aotearoa, I found out that my father had died while I was away. And I found out because of all my relations, my first cousins, my sister, my aunties and uncles, they had to meet me at the airport when I returned. My father couldn't have children, so my mother and my father, they adopted myself and my siblings, there's four of us. And without my father around, all of a sudden it felt like it's my father's village that we most closely connect to, because my mother is of Welsh descent. Without my father there to bind us, my whole identity kind of fell apart. All of a sudden it was like, well, these people who are my relations, they're just strangers. I suppose working through that loss, or dealing with that kind of loss, it was all of a sudden like, well, I don't actually know who I am. And, you know, the world really, really sucks. Like, sucks to be Māori, sucks to be gay. Lots of things about the world suck. Not having a father sucks. And so I really started to wish for death. It was like, what's the point? I grew up quite decolonized, I suppose, in lots of ways. Like, I grew up with a real awareness that people did not like me or would attach particular ideas to me based on the colour of my skin. And they were like, well, actually, that's never going to change. So what is the point of living? And in the years following my father's death, I just decided, well, if it's not worth living and if life is too hard and things aren't going to change, then maybe I should just do what I can to survive, but with the knowledge that I'm going to die. And it was like having a death wish, I suppose. And I was really careless about a lot of things. And in particular, I was really careless about sex. And as a result, I'd gone to Melbourne to kind of deal with the pain I was experiencing, I suppose, because I needed to be away from my family because we were all dealing with that same pain. Had lots of really unsafe sex. I mean, on the one hand, it was great. On the other hand, like, I knew that the consequences would be terrible. And, of course, when I found out, it was like, okay, well, you got what you wanted. But it was strange because in the split second that I found out, I heard this voice in my head, and it was like, okay, really, you want to die? Well, here's your opportunity. Make a decision, live or die. Now you make that decision. Like, you've been thinking about it, but now's the time to make that decision. You've got HIV. Do you want to live with it, or do you want to die with it? And I was like, actually, I don't want to die. I come from a beautiful place. I have beautiful things in my life. Why would I want to die? My father wouldn't want me to die. My mother wouldn't want me to die. My sisters and my brother wouldn't want me to die. My nieces and nephews wouldn't want me to die. So why would I want that for myself? And that thought process happened in a fraction of a second. And in that same second, I was like, okay, well, if I'm not going to die, then I'm going to be the most empowered version of myself that I can ever be. And it's been a good journey.
My name is Lana Wolf, and in today's podcast, I was speaking with Tafanga Nopira, a Māori whakawahine who has shared with us his extraordinary journey of decolonising himself to better reflect his cultural and inner self. He spoke about the confining Western notions of gay and how it's homogenous and can exclude cultural difference. How for him, culture has played an important part in deciding to live well, and how important family can be in accepting one's true self. Episode 5 of As I Was Saying was produced by myself, Lana Wolf, with the help of the fantastic Chloe Stannard. If you want to know more about the music in the podcast, check out our website www.joy.org.au/As I Was Saying. Joy is Australia's only queer radio station, and your financial support keeps us on air, so sign up and become a member today. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and join us in conversation, as well as checking us out on iTunes and leave a review. There's a new me coming out, and I just have to live, and I want to give. I'm completely positive. I think this time around I am going to do it like you never knew it. Oh, I'll make it through. The time has come.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.